This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 6th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 224. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary featuring guest Ivy Lee of Canadian Friends of Hong Kong. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. Mario Canseco of Research Co. on the truck convoy protests and the Beijing Olympics. And hear a former Canadian ambassador to China testify to the House of Commons National Defense Committee on the Chinese Communist Party's threat to Canada. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or are two civic politicians from Richmond, British Columbia, starting their re-election year in an odd fashion? Mayor Malcolm Brody and Councillor Alexa Liu have popped up at local events promoting the Beijing 2022 Winter Olympics with Chinese Communist Party diplomats. Canada is one of several countries involved in an international diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympics. Politicians have stayed home in protest of China's human rights abuses. Last year, the House of Commons condemned the treatment of Uyghur Muslims as genocide and called on the International Olympic Committee to move the Games out of Beijing. That obviously did not happen. But Tibetans, Hong Kongers, and Taiwanese are also concerned. Some politicians, however, are still choosing to engage with the Chinese government at home in Canada. Richmond, BC has been called the most Chinese city outside of Asia. Richmond Mayor Malcolm Brody and City Councillor Alexa Liu have appeared numerous times in recent months on Phoenix TV. They've appeared at local events promoting the games and closer ties with China, including the 10-day countdown event on January 24th. Listen here to Brody and Liu on Phoenix TV, a media outlet that is linked to the Chinese government.
And I don't
think we need to conflate the two things, right? So it shouldn't be the athlete's job to tell other governments how they should run their country. And it's not, you know, the politician's job to tell us whether or not we get to compete and, and why.
Yeah.
My hope is that we celebrate the athletes that we send to the Games and other countries send to the Games, because I know when the Olympics are successful, they have so many different athletes in different disciplines and they're all performing so well. And my hope is that the Canadian team performs really well, once again, as they have been doing in the past. And that we'll have time for our differences on the political venues. But I hope that that doesn't get in the way of a very successful Olympic Games.
My guest is Ivy Lee of the Canadian Friends of Hong Kong. I asked Ivy about why, when most politicians are not attending events in Canada with Chinese diplomats, that these two are. And what message does that send?
A fundamental duty of an elected official is to defend our democratic institution. One of the basic tenets of our democracy and Canadian values is the respect for human rights. For our elected officials to join the propaganda of the CCP to portray such an oppressive regime as a defender of the Olympic spirit is an incredibly huge insult and betrayal to Canadian voters and to this country. They're essentially helping the regime to sugarcoat their brutal behavior and their genocidal behavior in East Turkestan, as well as to the majority of the people in China, and also their aggression to us. I mean, we have to remember the two Michaels, and as well as there's still other Canadians on death row. And by actually countering our democratic values and participating in the propaganda and then helping them to get stronger and to get more spinning to their own domestic audience, the Chinese people, to help them to lie to them, at the same time also to help them to lie to the rest of the world, I think that is a very detrimental effect on our democratic system.
What do you think that means, Ivy, to the listeners who don't know about Phoenix TV and about this message that sports and politics should not mix?
Well, Phoenix TV is actually the CCP's mouthpiece. And during the Olympics, they actually put out very long daily propagandas about the Beijing, how they defend the Olympic spirit, how they actually is a country that respect human rights, and with our two politicians actually helping them to do that, it is inexcusable. But then I think that my main point here is that human rights are not politics at all. Is trying to stop someone from killing a person or raping a woman political? Is telling the police that someone is torturing his wife or beating up his child inside his house political? Of course not. If those politicians consciously conflating human rights with politics in order to please a brutal genocidal regime, then their motivation is extremely unconscionable. They are not only morally wrong, but they are complicit in genocide. If those politicians actually believe that human rights are politics, then their intellectual capacity and logical thinking is pretty low. Whether those politicians are complicit in genocide or intellectually very poor, either way, why would Canadians want to pay someone like that to make policies for us? And while those politicians are enjoying a comfortable life and receiving red carpet treatments from the CCP, many more victims would be murdered, tortured, raped, sterilized in East Turkestan? How many more Uyghur families would be destroyed and their children being orphaned and never know their own language and culture? I think that those politicians need to ask themselves, and then we Canadians need to ask ourselves why we wanted to vote for that kind of politicians, and why we trust our policy making in advance. I think that has a lot to do with we Canadians have to think about it. Is that is what we want?
I invited Mayor Malcolm Brody and Councillor Alexa Liu of Richmond, BC to appear on this podcast. Mayor Brody did not respond. Councillor Liu did respond. She said she did not have any time for an interview and she did not offer any comment. Both politicians are repeating the same message that politics and sports should not mix, and their message is being carried in their Phoenix TV interviews. Mayor Brody was the mayor when Richmond hosted Olympic speed skating in 2010, and he got reelected three more times. Councillor Liu snowboarded for Canada in the Vancouver 2010 Olympics and made sure that voters knew about that when she ran for office and won in 2014 and 2018.
These two people actually benefited from the image of Olympics, from the Olympic ideals, and so people recognized them and then they got their political careers. And so, and then they turn around and to saying that no one should use the Olympics to actually raise human rights issues and to defend human rights, it means that they turn around saying that while the Olympic ideals help us, myself, to get a better life, a better job, a better career, but other people shouldn't be benefited from the Olympic spirit to defend the basic human dignity and the basic need in life. So I think that it's very disingenuous, and also to say mixing sports with politics, IOC is the one that mixing sports with politics all the time. Otherwise, IOC will not have all those rules, so-called they call the Rule 50, to forbid the ethnics from speaking out on human rights. Office IOC is very aware and is very careful about not displeasing certain particular governments and regimes, and that is politics. And then to conflate human rights with politics and using that reason to forbid the ethnics or anybody to working for the Olympics to speak up for the on the behalf of those victims. And I think that that is totally contradictory to what IOC claimed, the ideal about why they wanted to have the Olympics.
That was my guest, Ivy Lee of the Canadian Friends of Hong Kong. The invitation remains open if Richmond Mayor Malcolm Brody and City Councilor Alexa Liu want to answer my questions on this podcast about their support for the Beijing 2022 Olympics. I would be glad to hear from them.
What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. David Mulroney was Canada's ambassador to China from 2009 to 2012, and he was the deputy minister in charge of Canada's Afghanistan task force. On February 2nd, David Mulroney testified at the House of Commons Standing Committee on National Defense about China's threat to Canada's national security. Here are his remarks.
When I left Beijing, I argued that we were failing to see China comprehensively as a country offering real opportunities, but also a growing set of challenges. 10 years on, this hasn't changed, except that I now believe that the balance has shifted decisively in the direction of challenge, and that China represents the greatest long-term threat to our country. Let me be clear that when I refer to China, I am referring to the People's Republic led by the Communist Party and not the people of China. This growing threat is fed by the conviction in Beijing that weakness and decline in the West are ushering in unprecedented opportunities for global leadership for China. This ambition is collective, shared at the highest levels of the Communist Party, but it's also profoundly personal, the guiding star of China's paramount leader, Xi Jinping. It is fed by a dangerous overconfidence in China's capabilities, and at the same time, by nagging doubts that growing economic headwinds, demographic decline, and mounting international pushback will deny China its global hegemony unless it moves quickly and decisively. There's a military dimension to this threat, and I will leave that for specialists to describe. While it applies to Canada, it is most acute for our friends and allies in East Asia, democracies whose safety and survival are vitally important to us, not least because they're home to so many Canadian citizens. This argues for investing seriously in the expeditionary capability of the Canadian forces, something important in itself, but also essential if we are to be welcomed into new alliances and if our voice is to be heard in the conversations that matter. In addition to the military threat, Canadians face PRC, People's Republic of China, aggression here at home. This includes harassment of members of the Chinese diaspora, as well as the many Tibetans, Uyghurs, and Falun Gong practitioners that China's Communist Party targets across this country. The threat also includes aggressive espionage, efforts to influence media and various levels of government, and even attempts to limit our autonomy. China's objective is to compel us into the kind of bilateral relationship it understands best, which means becoming its compliant satellite, a vassal state. Responding to this unprecedented challenge calls for a level of leadership, vision, and coordination that is rare in government. It will require multiple departments and the Canadian forces to understand and pursue goals over narrower organizational objectives. This challenge must not be underestimated and almost certainly requires changes to the machinery of government. We must also address two operational issues so fundamental as to be existential. First, we need to revitalize and repair leadership culture in the military and the public service, and recover the conviction that all public service, and here I include elected office, entails lifelong loyalty to Canada and an enduring obligation to protect privileged information acquired while serving this country. Second, we need to recapture what I would describe as a sense of national purpose, The defining element of Chinese strategy is psychological, aiming to intimidate and discourage an opponent so that he or she submits without a struggle. Bluster and intimidation are deployed to encourage passivity and defeatism, engendering in the foreign target a kind of national exhaustion, a widespread failure of will, and a drift into terminal dependency. The best antidote to this is a healthy sense of confidence in who we are and what we've accomplished, faith in our history, our institutions, and our people. We've needed to call on this resolve at key points in the past, and it has never failed us. But it is a resource that needs to be cultivated and replenished by our leaders and by our leading institutions. We can't meet the threat posed by China if we've lost touch with Canada.
Committee member Glenn Motz, the Conservative MP from Medicine Hat, Cardston Warner, asked Mulroney this question.
The communist regime there has obviously made Canada a target. And, you know, we're targeted for political and economic interference. Can you expand on how they go about doing that? And, you know, you did a little bit, and for the time that I have left, can you just give us your thoughts on that specifically?
There are three things principally that China has in its Canada policy. One is that we're seen as one of the most important allies of the United States. So anything they can do to weaken that alliance and split us off is valuable. Two, we're a source of technology. They don't always respect us, but they respect us in certain areas, and they are working 24/7 to make off with as much of that technology as they can. Third, Canada is home to groups that are of interest to China, notably the Chinese diaspora. The Chinese leader Xi Jinping talks about the great Chinese nation, and he's speaking globally, and that leads China to interfere in diaspora communities and to treat people as hyphenated rather than as Canadians. They victimize members of the diaspora, but also Uyghurs, Tibetans, and Falun Gong practitioners. So they're working at making us less reliable allies to the United States, deepening our economic dependency on China, making off with our technology, and interfering at the community level in Canada, all with a view to transforming us into a more reliable partner, or a more reliable client of China's. And you need only look at the rhetoric and the way that the Chinese ambassador and Chinese diplomats speak to us, including to parliamentarians. I've followed that over the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. The decibels are rising. The stridency is rising. They're assuming that they can tell us what to do.
That was David Mulroney, the former Canadian ambassador to China on February 2nd. It's not every day that a Canadian story gets worldwide attention. Truckers are protesting the ongoing COVID-19 public health measures, especially the vaccine mandate for cross-border trucking. The convoy to Ottawa might be the noisiest and most polluting protest Canada has ever seen. It is also very polarizing. Many people think the truckers should be arrested, but many support their freedom of speech. It is also the latest sign that Canadians are getting impatient and losing faith with their governments. In his latest survey, Research Co-President Mario Canseco is seeing Canadians losing confidence in the federal, provincial, and municipal governments. 56% of Canadians are satisfied with the federal government, which is down 7% since December.
There's been a lot of conflicting information recently. The idea for a couple of days or weeks that everybody's going to get Omicron and we might as well get used to it. And then a couple of days later, no, we should continue to take care of things, but we're not going to be doing the testing and we're not going to be doing the contact tracing. So this leaves people at a very vulnerable situation, especially when it comes to their own way of life. Restaurants might be closing. I think the fact that we had the Omicron variant happening right before the holidays in December made things even more complicated. People had to cancel trips. People weren't able to see their family. So there's definitely a sense of tiredness from Canadians at this particular stage. And when something like that happens, every idea is going to seem like it's going to get you to where you want to go. And I think that is what is happening at this stage with those who are supporting the truckers. It might not be the best course of action. And of course, we know just from the data that we have that a lot of people have been vaccinated and continue to believe that that's the right course of action. But it is perfectly normal for somebody to be vaccinated and to still be upset with what the governments are doing. So there is no unanimity on either side of this debate. You know, I don't think you can say that everybody who's been vaccinated, because 90% of us have chosen to do so, is happy with the way governments are managing things. It's not the right way to counter this argument. And I think that has also been problematic from the standpoint of the communications coming out of the prime minister's office. When you demonize a group for whichever reason, that group is going to be very upset. I mean, these discussions about the minority that doesn't want to get vaccinated has echoes of Hillary Clinton's comment about the basket of deplorables in the United States to refer to Donald Trump supporters. This is not the kind of politics that we're running in Canada, and I think people are reacting to it.
The Beijing 2022 Winter Olympics are on until February 20th. In a recent Research Co survey, almost half of respondents said they would not watch the games on TV. Almost 60% said Canada should have boycotted the games, and 72% said that they are worried about the health and safety of Canadian athletes competing in China.
There's support for athletes, but really not support for the games to have gone ahead, especially when they're going ahead in a pandemic in China, in a pandemic around the world still.
One thing that was really striking about the last survey we conducted is that there was an expectation that the number of Canadians who were going to be paying attention to the games would not be as high. Now we're in the middle of all of the promotional situations. Everybody's paying attention to this. And we still have almost half of Canadians who say, I don't want to watch this. You know, part of it is maybe you just don't like winter sports, or maybe you're disenchanted by the fact that the NHL players won't be there. But a lot of this is still related to the human rights situation. And essentially, people haven't forgotten about what happened to the two Michaels. You know, it's not normal to have 72% of Canadians saying that they're concerned about the health and safety of Canadian athletes in Beijing. Part of it is COVID, but the other part is we've seen what the government of the People's Republic of China is capable of doing with people from other countries when it suits their agenda. And this is definitely part of the situation right now. If the games were being held in Norway or in Sweden or in Denmark, we wouldn't have this much, this many Canadians saying that they plan to tune out. So it's definitely problematic because it's not a comment on the athletic prowess of our own Canadian athletes. It's more about the fact that this is not the right venue for the type of display that Canadians are used to watching.
That was Mario Canseco of Research Co. Find more information at researchco.ca. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.news podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Taiwan news, Japanese broadcaster announces Taiwan Olympic delegation as Taiwan. The Taiwanese Olympic delegation was referred to as hailing from Taiwan rather than Chinese Taipei by the Japanese broadcaster NHK during the Beijing Winter Olympics opening ceremony. The Taiwan delegation originally planned to skip the ceremony due to concerns Beijing would use the occasion to enforce its One China principle and falsely label Taiwan as part of China. However, they reversed their decision after pressure from the International Olympic Committee. In the Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Kong National Security Police arrest veteran democracy activist on morning of planned Winter Olympics demo. Ku Jie-yu, who has stage 4 cancer, was arrested on February 4th under the security law for suspected incitement of subversion. Police said that a 75-year-old was detained early on Friday in Sham Shui Po. He has often taken part in political rallies organized by pro-democracy party League of Social Democrats, but is not officially a member. Ku informed the media that he was planning to demonstrate outside Beijing's liaison office to protest China's Winter Olympics and call attention to political activists behind bars. In Kyoto news, Beijing Olympic bubble takes virus control measures to new level. The games are taking place behind closed doors, while all accredited visitors arriving from overseas must stay inside the Olympic closed-loop management system, comprising sports, venues, media centers, and hotels. More than 60,000 people are living inside the Olympic bubble, with local volunteers and staff, including cooks, cleaners, and drivers, making up the bulk of the population. Fences and security guards ensure the integrity of the bubble, with those inside only able to move from one game site to another using official Olympic vehicles.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.news podcast.
Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Portland's Asa Miller carries Philippine flag at 2022 Winter Olympics opening ceremony. Portland-born alpine skier Asa Miller, a graduate of Lincoln High School, was the country's lone representative. He is set to compete in the slalom and giant slalom events starting next week. He also carried the flag for the Philippines during the 2018 Pyeongchang Winter Olympics in South Korea. In King 5, Team USA curling coach has ties to this Seattle curling club. Since the doors opened 6 decades ago, the Granite Curling Club has produced more U.S. national championships than any other club. Sean Baton, a Team USA curling coach who was born in Edmonds, has won a few titles for the club. The Granite Curling Club currently has over 500 members. And in the Nanaimo News Bulletin, woman in Nanaimo discovers naked man in the trunk of her car. Bethany Croker, an automotive technician, found mud smeared on the seat of her car and elsewhere in the vehicle on January 30th, but it was another 3 days before she discovered a man had been hiding in the trunk of her vehicle. When she did discover the man, on February 1st, he was completely naked. She posted on her TikTok social media account a video of herself questioning the man, who is partially visible through gaps in the back seat center console of the Subaru.
The biggest sports superstar in Cascadia, Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson, is coming to Vancouver on April 26th. Get in the huddle at the Independent Contractors and Businesses Association annual banquet. For information and tickets, go to icba.ca or call toll-free 1-800-663-2865.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
Resident Doctors, the physicians of the future. It is Resident Doctors Week in British Columbia from February 7th to 11th.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
Vaccine, because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 6th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on February 6th in 1952, King George VI died, and his daughter Elizabeth automatically became the new queen? Now you know.
Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's PATREON.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.